Chapter 7. Strange Backgrounds. "All right, lads, that's it. Anything for me?" asked Staff Sergeant Morris at the troop parade after lunch. "Staff?" "Yes, young Bell." "I'm wanted back at the med centre, sorry. Consultation this morning, test this afternoon." "More? What for? I didn't have you down as sickly or lazy, or even slightly flawed, come to that."
"Glaucoma, Staff. My old man had it, and it can be passed on from father to son. I've just been told I should have regular checks to detect any signs of onset from now on."
"Ah, very sensible. My old man had glaucoma and ended up losing most of the sight in one eye and a bit in the other because he's too proud and pig-headed to get himself tested. I get a check-up once a year without fail. I thought you were a bit young for it to start, though. Anyway, if you test now, off you go. And the rest of you," he said, casting his glance around the troop, "if you don't know whether your old man had glaucoma or not, make sure you check it out, okay? Because if he did, it means free eye tests for you when you get out into Civvy Street. Well, ask those of you who know who your father was and how to find him. O'Connor?" This triggered a round of good-natured laughing and catcalling.
"Yes, Staff,"
came the laconic reply from the man stood three to Henry's left. Scouse O'Connor was a born comedian and a born rogue with a wicked sense of humour and iron fists.
"Well, given the certainty that your dad was some sailor's, O'Connor, you might have to ask around a bit for a definite identification."
"Right, yeah, Staff. I'll see if me mam can remember who any of me dads are next time I see her,"
he replied, prompting a further round of raucous amusement.
"Dunno what you're laughing at, Mickey, lads," he said over his shoulder to the young soldier stood behind him. "I'm one of your dads."
Staff Sergeant Morris put a lid on the jibing and then dismissed the troop to their afternoon duties, which were a continuation of the morning's work. Henry knocked on the consulting room door on the stroke of 2 o'clock.
"Come on in, Henry," said Dr. Conway, his outward charm and smoother edges restored.
Both doctors were standing to greet Henry as he came in.
"Everything all right?" asked Dr. Taban.
Fine, I used the glaucoma justification. But just to let you know, Staff Morris's dad had it, and he has all the tests regularly himself, so you better let me know what it is I'm supposed to be doing here before I go, just in case he asks."
"Good thinking. If you're likely to leave a trail but don't want to be followed, cover your tracks as you go. Trust me on that one," said Dr. Conway.
Henry did, and he nodded in acknowledgement. The two doctors scrutinised him briefly, and again he scrutinised them back as he waited for one of them to say something. He was not scrutinising their expressions, though. As they all sat down, he was looking at their steel-buttoned jackets as if trying to see through them.
"So, Henry, having been reminded of how we inherit DNA from our parents, we think it's appropriate to get some samples from your parents as soon as we can," said Dr. Conway.
Henry could not quite tell whether he was being serious or not.
"Oh, not happening. Sorry, Sir Theo," he replied.
"Sir Theo? Ha! What have you heard from the palace that we haven't?" said Dr. Taban.
"Never mind that. Not happening because?"
Dr. Conway asked, his expression matching the insistent and suspicious tone in his voice.
"Because they're dead," replied Henry, his voice emotionless and flat.
It was almost as if the two doctors physically deflated on hearing this news. It should have been in his records and in their briefing notes, but either they had missed the fact or the information was missing.
"I'm sorry to hear that, Henry," offered Dr. Taban, apparently sincerely, having recovered first. "When did they pass away?"
"They died," replied Henry, emphasising the word, "at about the same time I did my last A-level exam. They were decent enough to leave it until I'd finished them, so as not to disrupt my preparation and put me off. Perfectly comic timing, I should think."
"Timing? I don't understand," said Dr. Taban.
"Not ordinary died. Joint suicide pact died. Saw themselves off at home in Brussels somehow." Henry paused and gave each of the doctors a direct stare for a good couple of seconds before going on. "By the time I got their farewell letter in the post and could get myself over to Brussels, the house was already empty and they'd been cremated. They can't even have cooled down properly before they were heated up again, good and proper. I don't even know where their ashes went. And that was it. Nothing left of them or anything we owned. All gone. It's like they never existed and I have no life before that day.
Not that there was anything about me in the place by then. You see, I'd already taken everything that involved me away. With their encouragement, actually. It was a bit like being kicked out and disowned nicely, if you can imagine it. Everything about me, I had with me at school. It seems I'm comfortably off, though. Although they're gone, a bit of them lives on in a bank account that keeps me better than any honest salary ever will. An interesting metaphor for my genome story, really, he added. Dr. Conway glanced sideways at Dr. Taban, who had just turned slightly to look at him. This revelation had just opened several different lines of questioning. They realised immediately they had to be careful which to pursue in order not to arouse Henry's suspicion or to scare him off. We had no idea, said Dr. Taban. Oh, what about relatives? How are you supported through this? Oh, there are no relatives. Grandparents, long dead and forgotten, died before I arrived, you see, so I never knew them. Mum and Dad were both only children, like me, so no aunts or uncles or cousins either. They were family friends, my parents' colleagues. Weirdos mostly, with no kids and about as much intelligence, emotional intelligence, as a caveman. How ironic's that? I usually stayed with these people, I won't say friends, during my summer holidays from school, because Mum and Dad were always away working most of the time. All the time, come to think of it. There was our family solicitor, Dr. Lezinski, and his wife. They were nice. Like an aunt and uncle, really. She died of cancer a good few years ago, though. But support? No, I didn't need any anyway. I was perfectly capable of supporting myself. Funny childhood, said Dr. Conway. Yeah, funny peculiar, not funny, ha-ha. Still, I like to think I turned out all right. That I'm a normal human being. Well, at least I did until I found out I'm not altogether human. For Theo and Ben, knowing that Henry was only 18, even if Henry thought he was 20, made it difficult to know how to respond to what he had just revealed. But anybody else, either laughing or crying in sympathy, or both, would have been appropriate and acceptable. But Henry was a case on his own. So you have no known living blood relatives who could provide a DNA sample? Asked Dr. Conway, opting to remain dry and objective, deliberately keeping emotion out of the conversation. That's right. Inconvenient, I know, but I'm one of a kind in every sense. Henry, I'm really sorry that your parents were, well, no parents at all to you. And you do seem to be all right. Normal. But there's a lot at stake here, son. Now think hard about this. Have you got anything of theirs that might have enough DNA on it to get a sample so we can sequence it and compare their genomes to yours? And if you haven't, is there anyone else, anywhere, and I mean anywhere in the world, because we can hunt them down, who might? Come on, Henry, think. Henry gave Dr. Conway quite a hard stare. That meant he didn't notice the very discreet hand signal from Dr. Taban to suggest cooling his approach down a little. Like I said, sir, they saw themselves off and straight away they got cremated and scattered somewhere. The Mid-Atlantic, for all I know, or care now. When I eventually got to the apartment, the locks had been changed. Apparently the concierge was told I wasn't to be let in and that I was to be reported immediately to someone who would come and get me. Well, luckily his wife let me in on the QT. Felt sorry for me, I'd imagine. It had been emptied, and I mean there was nothing left. These were my folks' instructions, and it was like they didn't want me to take forward anything from my past life. Maybe memories, but certainly no souvenirs. All I had was the clothes, the books and the kit I had at school. I did have a photo album, a couple of scrapbooks and some other stuff there too. I decided, stood in that empty apartment, that I was going to chuck the lot out, even their last letter, which was their suicide note to me, the last real link I had. You know, finish the job and wipe the slate, forget them and make a fresh start away from them. But when I got back, my stuff was all missing anyway. Saved me the effort. Personal stuff about you and your past was missing from your private room in school. Did you report it? Said Dr. Taban, alarmed. No, of course. The school was genuinely concerned, naturally. It was a great place. They were always hard on anyone, even talking about nicking stuff off other kids. I only remember two minor episodes of it happening in my time there. They were just young kids messing about, really. We turned the place upside down looking, but it had all gone without a trace. Funny, because I like to think I'd secured it nice and tight. Somebody would have had to look very hard to find it.
Jesus, Henry,
Were your parents both suicidal types? I mean, what could have prompted them to write explicit instructions that everything was to disappear without a trace, including them? And it's as obvious as a slap in the face with a wet fish that nicking your stuff was a final act in cleaning up after them, or capturing data about you. Weren't you insanely suspicious about the suicide, the cleaning up, everything? Said Dr. Conway. Sure. But at that point, I just wanted out from that life since there was nothing left of it. New start, you know. The day after I was told there was no way of finding out where my stuff had gone or how it had been taken, I decided to sign up for a bit rather than go to university straight away. Typical of somebody who doesn't know any better, I thought about the Foreign Legion first. Then I remember there was this lad at school a few years ahead of me. He'd joined the Royal Engineers and he'd come back to school to give a talk about it at the start of my year 12. The engineers is me, really. I knew I'd fit right in. So I dismissed all my romantic notions of Beau Geste, and here I am, happy and carefree. Well, until today. Before Dr. Taban had the chance to say anything, Henry carried on. But whoever it was doing the cleaning missed one thing. Dr. Conway suddenly seemed reinvigorated and sat forward. What? Tell me. I know you're hoping it was two combs or toothbrushes or something. It was nothing quite like any of that. It was just a little picture frame. When you closed it, it looked like a piece of polished wood. It had a picture of each of them in it. There was a bit too much of that sentence in the past tense for my liking, Henry. You still got it? Where is it now? Dr. Conway pressed. Sure I've got it. It's in my cabin, said Henry. After all the other stuff went, I decided I might as well keep it for a bit, then chuck it. I've still not got around to it. Right, go and get it, Henry, now, Dr. Conway said. He sounded nothing like a government scientist and defence research manager, and a lot like his sergeant major might sound if he heard the lads describing his wife as a valley commando or a Neanderthal. Henry stood up and made to leave.
I'll be back, he said in another very passable impersonation.
Right, don't mess around, Henry. We're not doing funny right now. Just go and get it and bring it here. Don't let anybody see it. Don't talk to anyone while you're out. Be quick. Go on, said Dr. Conway, whose pretense of academic objectivity and personal charm had evaporated completely. When it was assumed Henry was well on his way, Ben said to him, Theo, just tone it down a bit, will you? Readjust your mask that's very obviously slipped, or you'll blow this whole thing wide open. Nice, rational, intellectual, Dr. Conway. Here to inform, here to help, here to manipulate, not push around. Doctor, human performance specialist, remember? Sorry, Ben. It's just that it was starting to look like a complete cluster. It looked like we had nothing to go on other than the safe and certain knowledge that there's something serious going on that we know nothing about. That makes me feel vulnerable, and it's a feeling I don't like. And then a chance of something, just one straw to clutch at, but... Well, at least it sounds like it could be a clutchable straw. Yeah, well, maybe, maybe not. Okay, well, unfortunate turn of phrase, as it is under the circumstances, but let's not spook him, all right? All right, sorry, I'm back on it. Something or nothing, let's see what he's got.